Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This episode of Politics Without the Boring Bits is sponsored by BT, because BT means business. BT knows that businesses come in many shapes, sizes, and guises, from the person just starting out at their kitchen table to the biggest employer, which is why no matter what line of work you're in, they've got your back to help you succeed and do what you do best. No doubt connectivity is a must in Westminster, and it certainly helped us to get this episode created and distributed to you listening right now. BT already connects more than 1 million businesses and public sector organisations, offering secure and reliable connectivity. Nearly three quarters of people running a business or side hustle feel they couldn't do so without reliable broadband and mobile connectivity. That's why having connectivity you can count on is a must for business, whether it be facilitating multiple devices being connected at once or making team calls or guest Wi-Fi access for customers. BT's connectivity helps keep you and your customers happy. Whatever your business, BT's got your back. Search BT's got your back.
Hello, this is the Webbox Podcast. I'm Matt Shawley. Coming up on today's episode, it's Wednesday, so it must be PMQs unpacked. Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer go at it across the dispatch box. And we pause the action live to try and explain what is going on. How many times will someone mention Peppa Pig? That's basically the only thing we're really interested in. We'll find out in a moment. But first, it's our columnist panel. It's Wednesday, so it must be Crampon. It's Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson. So, Alice, let's start off by talking about your column today in The Times, which tackles the snowflake generation and why we shouldn't be so dismissive of them. But we should point out that Culture Secretary, Culture Wars Secretary Nadine Dorries was talking about this at the Culture Select Committee yesterday and was asked to explain what a snowflake is.
You use the term quite often, snowflake lefties. What is a snowflake?
I think I might have used it once.
What is a snowflake lefty? I'm not...
Probably my kids.
Really? So what is... are they from Islington? Because what is an Islington lefty?
Well, again, one of my kids.
Well, she's honest, if nothing else, Alice.
Yeah, but she says she's not a snowflake and it's her children, but she's the one that refuses to go on the media and refuses to do any interviews. So actually, she's cancelling the media.
She's a bit snowflakey herself.
I think she's the snowflake. Yeah. I'd say that if I were the children, I'd be saying to her, God, you're a bit melty, aren't you? You're not getting out there. So actually, my column was about not snowflakes as much as being woke, and that there's, our readers don't like the Times, the idea of wokeness. And we did a poll and, the majority of them said that they couldn't bear children being woke. And I was saying, actually, there is a lot of benefit to being woke. And Rachel Sylvester and I do this podcast, which is called Past Imperfect, which is on Times Radio 2. And it talks to people about their very difficult childhoods. And a lot of them had a terrible time at school and they were really abused, either because their family had come from Pakistan or because they had cerebral palsy or because they were gay. And there's some really dreadful stories about playground bullying. And that has stopped to a certain extent. People don't use those kind of hideous names anymore. The lexicon's changed. And that's great. And I think if that's woke, that's fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, and that's not to say that there's not sort of bullying or unpleasantness generally. But yeah, if the homophobia, sexism, racism is... has gone a bit, then that's only good. I mean, the point that you make in your column as well is that woke is just the new version of PC gone mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just people who don't like moving with the times a bit.
Yeah. So political correctness gone mad was the kind of late 80s, 90s, particularly Daily Mail view of the world, which was, oh my God, why do we have to move forward? And I think that's the problem with wokeness too. But what I was also saying in the column is it's great if children are woke and it's great if they are moving forwards and trying to be more inclusive. The downside of their culture is this very much cancel culture, that if they don't think someone's woke, then they completely cut them out. And that's just as bad as some of the bullying that was on in the playground, really. It's that if you don't agree with us, then we're just not going to listen to you.
Robert, let's bring you in on the question of woke. And the point that Alison also makes in her column is that nobody under 30 uses the word woke anyway.
No, they don't. I mean, funnily enough, not for the first time, Alice has scooped me on this subject. I've got a piece along very similar lines coming out in the magazine this Saturday, where I went out for the evening with a bunch of 24, 25-year-olds. And I'd make that point in the piece. Nobody says woke. Nobody actually that I met is trying to cancel anybody either. I mean, I think as Alice said in her column, that happens at the extreme. The mainstream, the majority, are just kind of all for being nicer about people, which is hardly something that you can object to.
I suppose the thing is, Alice, with so many things, the focus on the extreme completely distorts things. On the one hand, you've got people who do want to tear down statues. No, not very many people want to tear down statues. The sort of very hard line woke in inverted. And on the other hand, you've got a whole load of people getting really cross about all of this. And actually, most normal people aren't going around thinking about this at all, beyond the extent of just be nice to people. I mean, just be nice. That's a perfectly reasonable thing.
Yeah, I mean, they are quite an altruistic generation. In fact, they're known to be, you know, they're the most altruistic generation we've had since the Second World War. What I find rather extraordinary is that, you know, we have got the extremes, but we've also got these incredible role models, which I just don't think I had, which is, you know, people like Malala or Greta Thunberg or, you know, Sara Soma, who's doing Everyone's Invited, or Marcus Rashford. You know, our footballers weren't going around campaigning for free school meals. You know, our generation were kind of getting drunk and going to nightclubs. This generation really do care. They're quiet. You know, I like the fact that they campaign like this.
And Robert, whose fault is it that this is sort of, is it old people, older people, not old people, older people? Is this just a sort of what happens in every generation? Older people struggle with what younger people are up to and talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think Aristotle was the first person to moan about the younger generation, wasn't he? No, seriously, when I read that when I was doing my research for this piece. He said some very unpleasant things about the new generation of ancient Greeks, or they weren't ancient then. Yes, I mean, it happens anyway. It happens, you know, generation to generation. I don't suppose I thought I'd ever do it, but I find myself sometimes saying disobliging things about the youth of today, not necessarily really meaning it. But, some people my generation do mean it. And I suppose that's because they are basing it on what a handful of people are thinking and doing regarding statues and that kind of thing. But the truth is, it's not a major issue. I mean, these I was going to say kids. I mean, they are kids to me. The kids that I went out with a couple of weeks ago are, I mean, I was one moment when I tried to hit them with some of their own language because I'd read up on some of the jargon and they didn't know what I was talking about because they used precisely talked about breadcrumbing, which means leading somebody on or keeping them on the back burner, and they said they didn't know what I was talking about. I said, well, we say leading somebody on or keeping them on the back burner, which is what people have been doing for 100 years.
I really hope you were doing this with a baseball cap on backwards with a sort of skateboard on your arm, just talking about breadcrumbing. It's interesting though, isn't it? Because also part of me thinks that maybe the sort of social media and the internet generally, I mean, teenagers, students, people in their late teens, early 20s have always done stupid things, got het up about daft things. But you did it in the privacy of your common room or student union or whatever it is.
Sure.
You don't end up on the front of the papers for it, and you didn't before.
Yeah, I think the only weird thing is the language, isn't it? And that there are bits when you're like, you know, I find with my children, I'll say something and they'll say, God, you know, don't say that. You can't say that. And that's the difficult part. If you're saying it with the right motives, I think they've got to be a bit more relaxed about it. But I think that's the most extreme level of what they're doing. The rest of it, you know, and actually I rather like the fact now they don't really want you to wear what they're wearing, or which is exactly what I had. You know,
well, they're all wearing what we wore in the 90s is what they're all doing now.
Yeah, well, the dungarees banned.
You're not allowed to wear
No, jumpsuit, dungarees, anything like that, no. Yeah. Even flares are a bit iffy about. You know, that is theirs.
Well, I
loved it when you said your grandma described you as with it in the 80s, because mine did exactly the same.
Yeah. I mean, with it was the word then, wasn't it? But then it wasn't as derogatory, was it? It was like, oh,
no.
Okay.
Yeah.
But it was already sort of, it was already a bit old fashioned. But they thought your grandma thought she was being really with it.
Yeah. Well, our parents telling you, I thought that I bought you that. I thought it looked trendy. You know.
Yes, trendy was the killer, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's the last thing. I've had lots of texts about woke, but I'm not going to bother with those. Robert, let's talk about the piece you've written in Times Today. We talked about this briefly on the show yesterday. This new guidance from NICE about subscribing exercise and meditation as a possible alternative to antidepressants and sort of moving straight to pills. But you've written a piece, well, the headline says, "Meditation, exercise, let me keep my antidepressants."
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying the last line of the piece is actually possibly more illuminating in that I say it's a both and rather than an either or.
Yeah.
Of course, I think most people find that their mood is improved by exercise or by meditation or by, if not meditation, then a meditative activity such as, I don't know, gardening or walking or, you know, doing kind of low-level chores or looking at a sunset or that kind of thing. That's obviously undeniably true, but for many of us, and it's an amazing 17% of the adult population in the UK, which is over 7 million people who are on antidepressants. We need the chemical alteration, the chemical boost as well, in order to be able to pursue all those other good things that everybody knows that we should be doing. So that's the point that I'm making is, you can do both. I mean, I'm all in favour of, you know, I think it's called social prescribing, where people say, you know, go and get some exercise, go for a walk in the woods, or I think that's great. But I'm also equally in favour, but for a number of us who do suffer from depression, you need that boost, which it certainly improved my life. I've been taking them. Antidepressants, Prozac, fluoxetine, commonly known, for 16 years, and it's when I tried to stop taking them, the results were not good. So I'd be wary of. I mean, I don't think doctors do give out antidepressants like sweets, and I don't think they're going to now stop handing them out to people who need them. But I would be wary of saying you can, if you're depressed, don't take a pill. Go to a spin class. I don't think it works like that.
I suppose it can cut both ways, kind of. Because I spoke to a doctor about this yesterday, and we were sort of saying, well, actually, it might mean that some people with very low levels of depression, mental health, might think, well, I might go to the doctors because he's not going to immediately put me on to pills and whatever. Yeah. So in that sense, it's a good thing. But what you don't want to do is also. The idea that, you know, it can all be sorted out with a walk in the woods slightly reinforces the old pull yourself together.
It does a little bit. It's trending that way. And I think, these drugs are long out of patent, so it's not as if they're particularly expensive, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a cost element. I mean, it's certainly when they're suggesting going to NHS counselling or CBT sessions or addiction sessions and so on, I think that's probably more expensive than. And drugs.
Yeah,
I don't think there's a cost issue, and there's no side effect issue. So I can't quite see a downside of saying to somebody, take these, see how it works, and that then might give them the boost that they need in order to do the other things.
Yeah, Alice?
That's the thing I took from Robert's column very much is you can't go for a swim or go for a run or go for a walk unless you're feeling well enough to get yourself off the sofa or get yourself out of bed. And that's when you might need it. And we've got quite a lot of depression in our family. And I think, you know, actually, without realising it, we were always trying to. You know, my mother was very keen on the fact that we had a routine, that we tried to do some exercise, that we tried to keep going. And I think that was part of it because she did get depressed. She knew that actually lying in bed, you know, wasn't a great thing. But there are moments when you can't get yourself up and get yourself out, and then you probably do need medication. Or what is a lot more expensive is getting therapy and CBT. But that is expensive, and there are huge waiting lists for that. So,
yes.
You know, I can see why GPs think, well, you know, wait a year and we might get them on that, or, you know, give them a pill and it will help immediately.
Yeah, it's basically the point that you make. Maybe this is the thread running through our whole conversation, is that not everything is black and white. It's not either or. Just be nice.
Exactly.
And different horses
calming,
for courses.
Sweet.
Different things for other different people. This sort of even-handed hand rigging centrist nonsense isn't going to get us anywhere. We're never going to go viral online with this.
Yeah, I think Rob and I are a bit centrist, mum and dad. That's the problem, isn't it?
But you're coming to the party.
We are. We're coming together, I think,
sure
aren't
thing.
We?
Sure yeah. thing. Why does it start at 5 o'clock? That's early. That is very early doors. 5 till midnight. I can't do that at those sort of hours anymore.
So this is the Times Radio launch party, birthday party, listening figure party and Christmas party all rolled into one tomorrow night. I assume you'll be dancing at some point, Robert.
No doubt, yeah. We don't get that at the comment party, which is next week. I'm looking forward to this one more.
Don't let them hear you say that. Robert Crampton and Alice Thompson, then. You can read both the columns online right now and join the conversation in the comment section underneath. You just need to get yourself a subscription. Go to thetimes.co.uk/timesredbox. Up next, it's PMQ's Unpacked.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Red Box Podcast now. It's time for this.
PMQs Unpacked on Times Radio. Unpacking the politics and cutting through the crossfire.
Order, order. I call Matt Chorley and Tim Shipman.
Yes, it's PMQs Unpacked, where we pause the action live from the House of Commons to analyse in real time what is going on. If you're listening along and you want to get in touch, you can text me 8722, start your message with the word Times, tweet at Times Radio. What do you think will come up? Any suggested questions for Keir Starmer or jokes or whatever? Get in touch in the usual ways. Tim Shipman, Chief Political Commentator of the Sunday Times, is here. What do you expect to come up, Tim?
It's a popcorn day, isn't it? I mean, Keir Starmer's job today, really, is to try and deepen the divisions between Boris Johnson and the people sitting behind him, or between some of the people sitting behind him and the other people sitting behind him. So there's quite a lot he can go at. He can delve into the misery of this quote that emerged from Downing Street saying, you know, it's all going terribly badly earlier in the week, which is tearing the Tories apart. But I think he's better off going on an issue like the small boats crisis, which a lot of those Tory MPs are enraged about and think that Johnson and Priti Patel are failing to get to grips with, or something that's more Labour's natural terrain, the social care shift, which led to a massive rebellion earlier in the week. That's something where Labour have a stronger view, and he could sort of spread a bit of misery on the Tory benches by doing that. So that's what I would expect him to do.
Going on an issue rather than just the Westminster gossip, you know.
Yeah, but he'll find some Westminster gossipy jokes along the way, I would imagine, because that will help him get some headlines in the papers and convince the parliamentary lobby that he's sort of on the ball. So it's important to have some good jokes today, I would think.
Well, Cameron's already offered one up. He says if Starmer doesn't use the line, he may not be Moses, but he's certainly a basket case. He needs new joke writers.
Well, I think it's fair to say he does need new joke writers, so that seems like a perfectly reasonable
we'll
observation.
Send that one in. Some form of Peppa Pig references
would seem to be inevitable.
Or, yeah.
Yeah.
although there's a real wish they've all been done in the last 24 hours.
Well, I mean, it's PMQs. I mean, it's not all jokes at PMQs are brand new, are they?
No, they're not all always totally
funny.
They're
not funny. Always funny, no.
But a lot of MPs in the Commons are wearing masks on the front bench. Jacob Rees-Mogg isn't, and I think that was Alistair Jack, the Scottish Secretary, isn't, but others on the government front bench are. It's a little bit busier on the Tory side than last week, I'd say. There's
yeah, but
less
still
green
not
leather.
Still not absolutely rammed, is it?
No, certainly on the lower end, so furthest from the common speaker, there's definitely spaces
the
there.
The cheap seats.
The cheap seats, if you like. Or normally that is where the troublemakers also sit.
Yes, perhaps they are gathering to plot and write their letters instead.
Now, how bothered should we be about this letters writing? It does seem like if all else fails, somebody starts speaking. You need 54 Tory MPs to want to oust Boris Johnson to send a letter to the 1922.
I mean, it ill behoves journalists to say that great excitement around letter writing is not a story. But I think I wrote quite a lot of these stories about Theresa May's government that was 20-odd points behind and having an absolutely terrible time, and it still took 2 years for them to get rid of her. It seems pretty unlikely that this is likely to come to a head anytime soon. Though there are some members of the awkward squad who I think were racing to be the first one to put the letter in a week or so ago, some of whom were early off the mark with the previous prime ministers. Some of them just like writing letters.
We should point out the whole point of this is you would trigger a vote of no confidence in the prime minister if he reached the 54 letters.
Yes, I mean naughty people have been tweeting pictures of Rishi Sunak at a desk scribbling and suggesting that that's what he might be up to.
He's too busy playing cricket for £35,000.
Yes.
In this auction. Extraordinary. Right, we're giving up to go live to the House of Commons for PMQs Unpacked. If you haven't heard it before, this is how we do it. We pause the action between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer and try to analyse in real time what's going on. Here we go.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At the last election, the Prime Minister promised that nobody would have to sell their home to pay for care. That's another broken promise, isn't it?
Prime Minister, no.
That's very... Right, so first of all, A, going on social care, as you predicted, so that's a point to Tim. Also, ask a really short question, because you slightly flummoxed...
You don't give him time to find the notes that, in, you know, he'd be scrabbling through his paperwork again,
forgive me. Well, we've got the no. Let's see what his response was.
No, Mr. Speaker, because if he looked at what we are proposing and if he supported what we are proposing, which is fixing something that Labour never fixed in all their years in office, Mr. Speaker, we are saying to the people of this country that we will disregard your home as part of your assets if you and your spouse are living here. And number two, Mr. Speaker, you can have a deferred payments agreement if you move out of it and you're living in residential care. You can have a deferred payments agreement. But most important of all, Mr. Speaker, by putting the huge investment that we are making now in health and social care, and we are allowing for the first time the people of this country to insure themselves against the potentially catastrophic, the otherwise catastrophic costs of dementia or Alzheimer's, Mr. Speaker. And even if you're not one of those people who suffer from those afflictions, we are taking away the anxiety from millions of people up and down the land about their homes.
Keir Starmer.
Right, so... This feels like it starts off feeling a bit like semantics, but it's a crucial point. This one, this question of having to sell your home and not having to sell your home when you're in it.
Yes, which is different from not having to sell it at all.
Yes.
So some people say this is a watering down of what Boris Johnson pledged. And the interesting thing about this is one of the things that is slightly troubling Tory MPs. They did this social care reform. Most people know there's not been a decent social care reform, you know, until this one came along. Lots of governments have tried and failed, and Boris Johnson's government has at least passed something. But he's not getting much credit for that because he's slightly overpromised in terms of what the policy would deliver. And now it's being unpicked. The same thing happened with the big trains announcement. They put 96 billion quid into building new track and trains, 55 odd of it fresh money. But because Boris Johnson said we'll definitely build all of HS2 and then they didn't, it looks like a disappointment. And this is one of the problems. You know, he promises the earth and delivers only the moon. And, you know, they if they'd rolled the pitch and said, here's a beautiful moon, he might be doing a bit better.
There's a joke about beautiful moons, which I shall resist making. Instead, we'll go back to the House of Commons and Keir Starmer.
I think the Prime Minister just described the broken system he said he was fixing. So it's certainly not a straight answer. Let's have another go. Let's have another go. He used to say... I see they turned up this week, Prime Minister.
Not all of them.
Mr Speaker. He used to say that...
Oh, Lindsay Hoyle.
I don't think I need any further. Yesterday we had a very good example of the House being at its best in that church. In that cathedral, please, let's show some respect. I want to be able to hear not only the Prime Minister, but the Leader of the Opposition. Shouting each other down doesn't do you or your constituents any good. We need to hear the questions, and I certainly need to hear the answers. And if anybody doesn't like it, please leave now. Keir Starmer.
Lindsay Hall, they're referring to the funeral mass of David Amos yesterday.
So let's have another go. He used to say that nobody would have to sell their home to pay for their care. It's in his manifesto right here. On the basis of that promise, he then put up tax on every working person in the country. So has he done what he promised and ensured that nobody will have to sell their home to pay for care? Yes or no? It's not complicated.
Prime Minister.
No, it's not complicated, Mr. Speaker, because what we're doing is disregarding your home as part of the assets that we calculate. So if you go down to £100,000, that's the beginning where we will ask you to contribute. But your home is not included in that, Mr. Speaker. And they have absolutely no plan. They've spent decades failing to address this. And only a few weeks ago, Mr. Speaker, they failed to vote for the £36 billion that will enable us to fix this and to help people up and down the country, not just to fix the social care problem, but to pay for people to live in their own homes, Mr. Speaker, and receive the care they need in their homes. That's what this One Nation Conservative government is doing. Why won't it support it?
It's all the same exchange, isn't it, Tim Shipley?
A little bit, but Boris Johnson's obviously had a good briefing here because there's all sorts of things coming out of his mouth that it's not entirely clear that he fully understands everything that he's saying. When you get down to 100,000, and there was reference previously to the deferred payments agreement, which sort of came gabbling out of his mouth a bit fast. And, you know, he'd clearly been told to say these things. I mean, his broad argument is a simple one. We did this and you lot have been trying to do it for years and you didn't, and why didn't you vote for it? It's a pretty standard Johnson response, but he's trying to provide a little more detail than he does sometimes, and it's not clear he's entirely comfortable with
that. Yeah, if you start your answer with, it's not complicated, and then make it sound quite complicated.
It sounded very complicated.
But also with him, it's a sign of, I mean, he's not a man who lacks confidence, but it's an indication that he knows it's a slightly stickier wicket.
Yeah, I think that's right.
That he's putting slightly more thought into the response.
And Starmer did well with his sort of off-the-cuff, you know, they've turned up this week, Prime Minister, making reference to
It's a bit of a shame that Lindsay Hall then intervened. You know, yeah. Keir Starmer's clearly trying to wind up the Tories. So if he does it successfully, that, you know, it's his lookout if his next question's slightly muffled. But anyway, we'll find out if the next one is. This is question number three from Keir Starmer.
Mr Speaker has had two opportunities to stand by his manifesto commitment. He's not taken them. It says he just has. So let's test this in the real world, Prime Minister. Under the Prime Minister's plans, a person with assets worth about £100,000, most of it turned up in their home, would have to pay £80,000. They'd lose almost everything. How on earth does the Prime Minister think that they can get their hands on that kind of money without selling their home?
Yeah. Prime Minister.
Mr Speaker, I'm going to have a third go trying to clear this up in the befuddled mind of the Right Honourable Gentleman opposite. Because it is important, and the fact is that the party opposite have totally failed to address it. They haven't had the guts to fix this in all their time in office. It's something left over from the Attlee government, and we are fixing it. And let me repeat for the third time, Mr Speaker, since your home is disregarded. Number two, even if you have a second home in your residential care, Mr Speaker, you have a deferred payments agreement if you want. And number three, Mr Speaker, we are allowing you to insure yourself for the first time against the catastrophic consequences by capping it at 86,000, Mr Speaker. And now he stood on a manifesto to put the cap where, Mr Speaker? At £100,000, Mr Speaker.
Keir Starmer.
I don't think
there's just one befuddled mind here, is there?
And the problem is that Keir Starmer, you know, Boris Johnson keeps saying, well, you didn't know anything, but Keir Starmer's never been in government. Boris Johnson is in government. He's come up with a plan which, for which he deserves some credit. But if it doesn't live up to the promise of
that he himself made,
then politically is a problem.
It is. And he seems now to be having a go at the Attlee government, which is a bold manoeuvre.
And the other thing is, the deferred payments thing is means if you do go into a care home, you do have to pay it later. Your house will have to be sold, but after you've done
it. The whole point of the deferred payment system is it wouldn't be necessary if what Boris Johnson is asserting was correct.
Because if
it's there precisely to cover the fact that you might have to cough up this money, probably by selling your house.
Probably by selling
your
house later.
You'd sell it later.
Which is why there's a distinction between you will not have to sell your house you will not have to sell your house if you are living in it.
Yes.
Or you will not have to sell your house while you are alive.
But you will have to find assets, which probably you will have to find from your house after the event.
And the point is, in particular, is the way that they've done this, this tweet that they've made, is it particularly hits. If you've only got 100,000 assets, you lose almost all of it. Whereas if you've got 500,000 of assets under this plan, you're still left with 400,000.
Exactly. So the people who will probably be fine are mostly in the south, and the people who will lose out are precisely those voters that Boris Johnson said he was going to look after when they lent their votes to the Conservative Party in the north of England in 2019. That's why it's so politically toxic for him, and it's deepened those splits that we were talking about earlier between the sort of 29 intake and the old guard in the south with their big majorities.
Now, let's see where we are. So we're halfway through. We've had three questions from Keir Starmer. Does he do all six on social care, or does he broaden it out? Does he talk about other things? Does he dare mention Peppa Pig? Let's find out. It's question four from Keir Starmer.
The question was very simple, and it's the question all of his backbench answered. If you've got a house worth about £120,000, £140,000, how do you find £80,000+ without selling your home? It's common sense. Strip away the bluster, strip away the deflection, strip away the refusal to answer the question. There's a simple truth, and this is why the Prime Minister won't address it. People will still be forced to sell their homes to pay for care. That accounts... Why did they... Look at the vote the other day to see the answer to that question. They'll still be forced to sell their home. It's another broken promise. Just like he promised that he wouldn't put up tax. Just like he promised 40 new hospitals. Just like he promised a rail revolution in the north. Mr Speaker. Who knows?
Boris Johnson getting quite agitated on the front
bench. Who knows if he'll make it to the next election? But if he does, how does he expect anyone to take him and his promises seriously?
Let's just jump in there, because there's quite a lot to unpick. I mean, it's interesting the point you were making before we even started, Tim, that there's difference between over-promising and under-delivering. He said he wouldn't put up tax, which obviously that's a straightforward broken promise, because he is doing that for social care. He promised 40 hospitals. And to try and get there, they're now calling basically
any extension,
it suddenly becomes a new hospital. Well, if they just said, we're going to, extend 40 hospitals, that's quite a good promise, and people might have liked that. And similarly, on the rail revolution for the north. There is a rail revolution happening in the north. It's just not quite as big as the one he promised. A bold move, I might say, from Keir Starmer to say, if he survives until the next election, given that both of them have their own question marks over their prospects of fighting, going all the way to whenever it is.
But an interesting riff, this, from Starmer, and it's a riff you can hang pretty much anything on every week, and one can only presume that their focus groups are beginning to pick up, you know, this riff about broken promises, and that is, you know, problematic for a government at the best of times, and it's the thread that hangs all the chaos together. That lots of the things that have happened, I think a lot of Tories have rightly said, this won't cut through, or this won't be what people are thinking about at the time of the next election. But if you can sew it all together with this riff on broken promises, that's the sort of thing that does enter into people's consciousness, and it's the sort of thing that does make people change their votes.
And I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? If they just went, oh, he's a joke, the thing about him being a joke and the joke's warranted, people still find the joke funny.
They do.
But if he's not delivering the promises, then they haven't worked.
This feels to me like he's onto something here, finally.
Right, let's go back to the comments.
Mr. Speaker, yet again he raises the rail revolution in the north, and the three new high-speed lines.
We only got it last Thursday.
96, £96 billion. Nothing like it. Again, nothing like it. Nothing like it. Nothing like it, Mr. Speaker. Nothing like it for a century. And just for the advantage of, I didn't even know this. I was in a state of complete innocence about this last week, Mr. Speaker. But it turns out that the Right Honourable Gentleman actually campaigned against HS2 altogether. Said it would be devastating and said it should be cancelled. I can tell you something, Mr. Speaker. HS2 runs through my constituency as well. And I took a decision, even though it's been very tough for my constituents, I took a decision that it was the right thing to do for the long-term interests of the whole country. How can they possibly trust that man?
So we should point out that this was a reference to a story that came out last week, that back in 2015, Keir Starmer tweeted, handing over petitions against HS2 in Parliament today with my neighbouring MP, Tulip Sadiq, because he's an MP in North London.
Well, that's a good bit of staff work by the Tory party. I think some people will be amused to hear Boris Johnson talking about his constituents. It's a little bit unclear when he last visited it. Yes, putting the country first. I mean, you know, he's got a good argument. And this, you know, this is the what we're going to see at the next election. If the Conservative Party have delivered this stuff and it makes a material difference to people's lives, then that will be fine. And they will probably keep those votes. If they don't deliver on this stuff and people think that it's just a series of broken promises, then they're vulnerable. And what you're beginning to see, we've had, you know, the last couple of PMQs have been quite lively, and you're now beginning to see both sides get a bit more of a handle on which arguments are working for them. Starmer has, you know, fumbled around quite a bit over the last year looking for an argument that works, and the kind of arguments that he himself thought would work haven't really. This whole idea of Boris Johnson being sort of chaotic and a joke, people have sort of priced that in. But all politicians are vulnerable to broken promises. And, you know, Boris Johnson more than most, because he's more prepared to just, you know, promise something that is frankly unlikely.
But the trouble is, because he's a good salesman, people notice the promises.
Yes, exactly.
He's very good at selling the promise. So there's almost...
Yeah, I mean, a lot of politicians make promises and nobody's even heard of them, yes. Let alone what their promises are.
So he's very good at selling the promise, but then he's more vulnerable to the charges not delivered on them. Well, I think we've got is now question number 5 from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, I think he's lost his place in his notes again. The only thing he's delivering is high taxes, high prices and low growth. I'm not sure the Prime Minister should be shouting about that. And it isn't just broken promises, it's also about fairness. Everyone needs protection against massive health and care costs. But under his plans, someone with assets worth about £100,000 will lose almost everything. Yep. Yet somebody with assets of about £1 million will keep almost everything. Yeah. It's just like their 2017 manifesto all over again. Only this time, something has changed. He's picked the pockets of working people to protect the estates of the wealthiest. How could he possibly have managed to devise a working class dementia tax?
Yeah. He's picked the pockets of working people. I'm not sure that nothing has changed, something has changed. It can't be like 2017 and then not be like 2017. I mean, I'm also slightly surprised Keir Starmer should have probably gone off into another direction, maybe gone on rail, pick up something else. Well, that question was quite a lot like the last one.
If he can keep the riff going but build on it each time, then that has more power than
adding in another boat.
Getting into sort of, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. It's sort of felt like it's petering out a little bit.
Well, let's see if Boris Johnson gives
and
a
still no Peppa Pig.
Having been asked the same question essentially five times, let's see if Boris Johnson gives a different answer.
Mr. Speaker, I think I've answered that question 3 times already. This does more for working people up and down the country than Labour ever did. Because we're actually solving the problem that they failed to address. We're disregarding your housing asset altogether, Mr. Speaker, while you're in it. And he talks about jobs, he talks about working people. Well, let me just remind him. There's just one key statistic that people should bear in mind. It's now almost a month after furlough ended. He talks about the economy, Mr. Speaker. There are now more people in work than there were before the pandemic began. And that's because of the policies this government has pursued.
Keir Starmer.
Still no Peppa Pig.
Very sad.
I think that's probably enough of that, isn't it? Let's take the last question from Keir Starmer.
Mr. Speaker, there's no getting away from it. Working people are being asked to pay twice. During their working lives, they'll pay much more tax in national insurance, whilst those living off wealth are protected. And then when they retire, Mr. Speaker, they face having to sell their home when the wealthiest won't have to do so. It's a classic con game, a Covent Garden pickpocketing operation. The Prime Minister's the front man, distracting people with wild promises and panto speeches, whilst his Chancellor dips his hand in their pocket. But now the Prime Minister's routine is falling flat. His Chancellor is worried that people are getting wise. His backbenchers say it's embarrassing. Your words. And senior people in Downing Street tell the BBC it's just not working. Is everything okay, Prime Minister?
Prime Minister!
Well, Mr. Speaker, I tell you what's not working, it's that line of attack. Because I just want to repeat the crucial point, Mr. Speaker. We're delivering for the working people of this country. We're delivering for the people of this country. And we're fixing the problems that they thought could never be fixed. We're doing the things that they thought were impossible. And let me repeat, there are now more people in work in this country, jobs up, with their wages going up, Mr. Speaker, than there were before the pandemic began. And that is because of the policies that this government has followed. Whether it's on rolling out the vaccine, if you remember that he opposed, whether it's on investment that he opposed. He did, Mr. Speaker. He didn't want to invest in the vaccine task force. I seem to remember. Whether it is making the strategic investments that we have. If we listened to Captain Hindsight, Mr. Speaker, we would have no HS2 at all, because that was what he stood for. And if we listened to him, we would all still be in lockdown, Mr. Speaker.
Well, there we are. That brings us to the end of the main exchange between Boris Johnson and Keir Starmer. It's interesting. So the first thing I want to pick up on, Tim Shipman, who's with me, Keir Starmer talked about the Covent Garden pickpocketing operation. Because the reason that leapt out to me is because the Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves used a similar line when she was responding to the budget, because Keir Starmer had got COVID. When she said, it's a classic con game, like one of those pickpocketing operations you see in crowded places. The Prime Minister is the front man, distracting people with wild promises, and all the while the Chancellor is dipping his hand in their pockets. But that also turned out to be, at times, almost word for word lifted from something that William Hague used when he responded to one of, I think it must have been Gordon Brown's budgets. But you do wonder if everyone were heaping praise on Rachel Reeves' response to the budget has inspired Keir Starmer.
Well, you also wonder if any of them actually listened to it as well, because it's a little bit elaborate, and it certainly wasn't delivered particularly effectively there, I didn't think. You need sort of lines that cut through straight away. That would take up, frankly, slightly too much airtime on the BBC, I suspect, to have much of an impact. And Boris Johnson had a decent riposte with, an off-the-cuff line about, I'll tell you what's not working, it's that line of attack. And then, blah, 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 into his usual...
We'd still be in lockdown.
...roundup. That was a decent session, wasn't it?
So let's zoom out a bit. So because we don't want to get too obsessed with where we are right now, individual stories and individual PMQs. What does this tell us about where the two leaders are and their strengths and weaknesses? Keir Starmer is sort of improving, but not hugely, and Boris Johnson's more vulnerable than he was?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. Starmer's got a better argument, but he doesn't always make it terribly well. And Johnson knows he's under pressure. He can bluster through to a degree, but it doesn't always get him completely out of trouble. And that's what some of his MPs are beginning to look at and say, is the bluster enough? it's clearly not. There's a lot of other things going on, and Boris Johnson has got some achievements to point to. But as an exchange, you know, it's good to hear the Commons pretty lively. The other thing that struck me today is if you look at those, the mask apartheid on the Tory front bench is fascinating. It's all the right-wingers who aren't wearing them. Jacob Rees-Mogg, Liz Truss, Nadine Dorries, Priti Patel, no masks. Alok Sharma, Rishi Sunak, Sajid Javid, Michael Gove, the sort of more centrist people, all in masks. Another Tory split.
Yeah. The elaborate Venn diagrams of where they all are really stands out. Lots of people on Twitter are picking up on the phrase working class dementia tax and the expectation we might be hearing rather a lot of that from the Labour
Party. Well, the same phrase worked against the May government during the 2017 election. And if you tack working class onto it, that starts to have an impact, the Labour Party will hope, on those red wall seats again. And, you know, Boris Johnson's challenge is he's got a pretty weird coalition that no Tory leader has had before, and that's why he won a big majority, and that's why he's an effective politician, because he's managed to bring quite different sorts of people together. But keeping them all on the same page is going to be a challenge. And, you know, he's got to be flight of foot to pull that off. And a good leader of the opposition will keep pulling at those threads. And Starmer's beginning to show signs of life in terms of running the right arguments.
But like we are, as someone pointed out today, we are probably at least two years from a general election, and they're neck and neck. And normally midterm, you'd probably expect the opposition to be further ahead.
Yeah, they would normally expect to have a decent sized lead at this point, and that's what a lot of the older, wise Tory folk keep referring to. Unfortunately, quite a lot of the new Tory folk have never been behind. They're not used to it. They don't like what it feels like, and are more likely to be jittery, I think. And they seem less determined to have ministerial careers and be loyal than most new intakes. And that's a problem for Boris Johnson, because there's a heck of a lot of them.
And politics is much more volatile than it was. And Boris Johnson, like you said, his victory was based on people switching. And once people switch, they have a habit of switching again. It doesn't mean that you've got them all in the bag forever. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Acast, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And listen to my show on Times Radio, Monday to Thursday, 10 till 1. And to read more about what we've been discussing, you can subscribe at thetimes.co.uk.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.